Welcome to AvWeb Audio for Friday, October 27th, 2006, sponsored by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. Mike Blakeney reporting for AvWeb's Audio News. After months of silence on the future of airspace restrictions around Washington, D.C., there are rumblings that the federal government is getting ready to announce progress on those deliberations. David Wartofsky is the owner of Potomac Airfield, one of the so-called DC-3 airports that have been most affected by the security concerns for the nation's capital. He told AvWeb's Russ Niles that an alternative to the Air Defense Identification Zone is being discussed at the highest levels in Washington, and it's something that not only will secure the Capitol, but will make life easier for pilots. Wartofsky isn't giving any details, but listen carefully and you might get an idea of where this is headed.
I understand there's some potentially exciting news coming up.
Essentially, the current situation is that the people who need to know, as do others, that the 15-mile circle was insufficient to achieve any real objective. It was essentially a prototype. So that's what precludes people from saying, well, why don't we just drop the 30-mile ATIS down to 15 miles, because they know that doesn't work. The flip side of that is a 30-mile FRZ would be economically catastrophic. It's sort of like the three bears. A 30-mile bowl of porridge is too large, and a 15-mile bowl of porridge is too small. People don't know what to do. One of the fundamental flaws in a lot of the original policy on this was, first off, to presume that airplanes must come from airports, which is not true. Airplanes can come from anywhere. And so that's actually what moved it to an air defense strategy, which I summarize on my website, basically says unauthorized airborne movements will be blasted to little bits. That's your security. And it becomes sustainable by allowing people who are not a threat means to bypass at least the outer layer of defenses. The actual underlying, people tend to get security and access all confused. For example, people think that giving people security cards creates security. And a security card doesn't provide any security whatsoever. You're going to have someone give you 12 cards. All it can do is provide access to an area or an area of concern that's otherwise secured. So, for example, but until you actually have a way of keeping people from entering, those cards serve no purpose.
Before we started recording this, you said that there is some movement on the ATIS.
There is a substantial alternative to the current airspace that is currently at the Secretary of Transportation's desk and some others, including the White House, that puts forward an alternative that is more effective, more sustainable, less intrusive, less workload, more efficient. It's built on some information that's sort of fundamental to the whole matter of airspace security in the National Capital Area. And once people are exposed to that, they go, oh, I get it. That makes sense. You know, to the extent that I am able, I've been trying to have people informally weighing in on, what is a logical alternative, because people realize that if you're waving one chicken over your head, you cannot enhance security by waving two chickens over your head. A big part of the reason the U.S. government was created was to defend the freedom of its own citizens, and it is unacceptable, politically, morally, and operationally, to enhance security and ignore the consequences to freedom. Destroying our own economy merely delivers the enemy's objective.
So in other words, without telling us exactly what is in this proposal, you seem to be saying that this is something that we can all live with a little bit better.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What we really do in the National Capital Area is not try to regulate terrorist behavior. The security has to do with ground and air defenses. That's what keeps the bad guys away. This is what makes that sustainable is what the military calls safe passage procedures. What are the techniques you use in a hostile situation to keep from shooting down your own fighters when they're coming back to an airbase? Now, military aircraft have specialized equipment and capabilities. What do you do if the aircraft doesn't have that? You use procedural keys, effectively. And the problem is, current paradigm is two fig leaves. You essentially have two fig leaves. And so it's very hard to admit, politically, for a lot of folks, what's a fig leaf. They don't want to admit what's a fig leaf. So what you have to do is you have to say, okay, let's discreetly and quietly pull the fig leaves aside and look at what the objectives are. And the objectives are twofold. First off is enhance security. No one wants anything nasty happening in the nation's capital. And the second is to defend our way of life. And if the only effective way to attack the U.S. economy is to get the federal government to do it for you. So part of the objective really here is a paradigm that is sustainable, that allows those that are not a threat to go about their lives, whether it's a three-star general going to the Pentagon in his Cessna 172, or it's a taxi cab driver visiting his mom in Alexandria, both of which are legitimate. I think at the end of the day, if out of sheer exhaustion, for no other reason than sheer exhaustion, things will boil down to what they need to be. One friend with an agency that I will not identify said, the U.S. government will always do the right thing after it has exhausted every other possibility.
Okay, well...
People are looking for something that is the right thing to do, and people also understand that a lot of what they're doing now is the wrong thing to do, and they just need to be given a bridge.
The U.S. government is trying to do the right thing in terms of lessening the economic impact on facilities
exactly.
like you, so you've submitted some comments on...
Right. I'm willing to make a small bet that now that the Coast Guard has been given the air interdiction mission, and the Coast Guard, as a branch of the DOD, will be able to step forward and say, hey... Here's what makes sense. Part of the problem has been, in the spirit of Washington, you know, no one's really been in charge of anything, which provides an easy way for someone to wait for the other guys that aren't in charge of something to approve what they're not in charge of anyway. You know, it's a way of everyone standing back and waiting to see who steps forward.
No, I was talking about the compensation package.
Mm-hmm.
And
the economic impact to the Maryland 3 and the DCA operations.
Is it fair?
It was written... by economists and government personnel who have never run a small business. And much of the language is confused and confusing because people are talking back and forth past each other using some of the wrong terms. I've put comments in electronically that should be public any day, and I've submitted initial comments to the SecDOT's office trying to clarify, because there are a number of terms that, you know, these are not obviously... You know, Fortune 500 companies that have been impacted. There are lots of small sole proprietorships, small closely held private businesses. And in that context, one of the differences, a small business takes any nickel it can get of retained earnings and puts it back into, you know, more capacity, advertising, telephones, whatever. And the language as written is basically can be interpreted a whole bunch of different ways. And it's going to need to be clarified. And I do actually think that it was written with the best of intentions. And it's a logical starting point, but it's slightly confused, which, frankly, coming from federal government on anything is not a bad starting point. In fact, as I had mentioned to that office, I said, one of the reasons I'm confident it's not an evil plot is that an evil plot would run much more smoothly.
Okay. Well, we had kind of a nasty accident at Tipton inside the 8IS, and
yep.
there was definitely... an 8IS component to that. What are you hearing about that?
Well, ask yourself the question. If the pilot hadn't been freaked out by the controller telling him to land immediately, would they be alive today?
I don't think any of us can answer that, but...
Obviously there was an aspect of intimidation and confusion, you know, that was a contributing factor to the accident. Not causal, but that has been a question in the back of a lot of people's minds has been that much of these procedures, some without objective or some with misguided objectives, have, in fact, raised the question of safety significantly. And, in fact, at the end of the day, FAA has sole authority over airspace in coordination with some other agencies. It's not quite as clean as that. And perhaps this will get the FAA doing a little internal examining to actually exercise the authority it has to straighten out some simple things. Because there are a number of foreseeable situations. This was one, and there are some others.
Now, we also talked to the FAA's Laura Brown, and she confirmed that there is an alternative proposal being worked on, but she also said she wouldn't consider its release to be imminent. Also making news this week, Eclipse Aviation hopes to deliver its first customer aircraft very soon, and it's coming with an extra piece of equipment not on the normal options list. Find out about JetBlue getting in hot water over a pilot fatigue experiment, Cirrus's new black box, and a training program to help Cessna Caravan pilots deal with ice. All this and much more at www.avweb.com. Please send comments and suggestions for AvWeb Audio to audionews@avweb.com. Today's audiocast was sponsored by Aviation Consumer, the consumer resource for pilots and aircraft owners. Check it out online at aviationconsumer.com. Look for AvWeb's next audiocast on Monday, October 30th. I'm Mike Blakeney. Thanks for downloading AvWeb's Audio News.